to WBFY 100.9 LP in Belfast, Maine.
Support for Belfast Community Radio comes from our listeners and from the Old Professor's Bookshop, a Harvard Square bookstore in downtown Maine, featuring a unique selection of scholarly and rare new and used books, located at 99 Main Street, open 10 to 4 most days.
Hello, hello, it's Ellen Sander, host of Poetry Woodshed Radio. Not your ordinary poetry hour full of readings, recordings, spoken word, commentary, quirk, and quintessential poetry love. For the connoisseur and the merely curious, we have the classics, the contemporaries, the beats, the geeks, the jammers, and the slammers. So join us right here on WBFY.
Poetry Woodshed's hours are Wednesday at 7 p.m. and Saturday at 11 a.m.
Welcome to Books and Writers, a masterclass in how to be a better, more successful writer. I'm your host, Spencer Stevens. We talk with people who know books and publishing, writers, writing teachers, editors, publishers, booksellers. We demystify the process of getting published and getting noticed. On Books and Writers, you can learn about book launches, finding literary agents, winning awards, writing dialogue for characters who are even smarter than you are, thinking like an entrepreneur. Books and Writers is inspiration and education for writers in all stages of their careers.
Our guest this week on Books and Writers is Sarah Beth Martin. She's the author of The One True Ocean, which was published in the U.S. and Germany. Her short fiction and essays have appeared in various magazines and literary journals, including Cicada, Pearl, West Wind Review, Women Writers, Women's Books, and most recently, Flash Fiction Magazine. Her second novel, completed, is under contract with Encircle Publications and due out in fall 2022. She's wrapping up a third novel. Sarah grew up in Massachusetts among creative parents and siblings and spent her early years painting and taking part in local art shows. She studied drafting at Lowell Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and later attended the University of Southern Maine. Sarah's love of books and writing began early, but it wasn't until she relocated to Maine that she began submitting her work. She also created and edited the literary journal Foliage, which published the work of writers nationwide. When she began publishing her own work, she closed a journal and began writing her first novel. More recently, she wrote articles and social media copy for various clients and customers. You can find Sarah on her website at sarahbethmartin.com, and there you'll find links to her pages on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Sarah Beth Martin, welcome to Books and Writers. We're very happy to have you here, happy to have a chance to chat with you about a variety of subjects, including your most recent novel, One True Ocean, and the novel that you have in the pipeline that I understand will be published in 2022.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. One True Ocean, published in 2003. I understand it's about a woman who has two things that she wants. One is to recover from the grief of losing a husband, and the other is to find her father. And she moves into the family home, a family home that has bad memories because a family suicide took place there, and she begins to see and hear and learn things that she didn't know before.
That's correct, yeah.
And I'm wondering about the inspiration for that. It sounds a little mystical, a little atmospheric. I'm wondering where the ideas came from.
I think I would say the idea is probably mostly the setting I was in. I had moved to Maine. Well, it was several years before, so I'd moved from Massachusetts to Maine in 1990, and I started writing the book in 97. And I think it was just the Maine coast that pretty much, you know, sparked the idea, because I tend to do that. I just fall in love with settings, and sometimes I build around that. But I also, I had read some headline about someone who had been left a house by their grandfather or something like that. And it's one of those things you see in movies a lot, you know, like someone gets a house and moves in. And I thought, well, this really happens, I guess. So, you know, that was the second thing. And so it kind of went from there. And then everything else sort of fell into place as I was writing it. I don't really plan that much when I'm writing. I tend to just sort of let the pieces fall into place, I guess.
Sure. So moving into an old house in a new location in Maine led you to think about family drama and family strife and things like that. Is it that simple, or was it more complicated?
Probably a little more complicated, but it's also I'm definitely inspired by a lot of the stuff I read. And I was recently, I believe I had published, I think at that point I'd published a couple of short stories, and I was just playing around with novel writing. I didn't really think it was going to go anywhere. But the more I wrote, the more I loved it. And some of the writers that I like reading, they write about that sort of thing, like buried memories, family secrets, you know, denial and just the power of denial, things like that. So, and mine probably has a little bit more of a darker edge. I tend to be, when I say dark, more like mystery, a little bit of mystery and suspense in it. So, I mean, it just kind of naturally happened after a while.
Sure, sure. Any of the characters or events come from your own life or from sources, you know, where you've observed these kind of things happening?
Probably, I wouldn't say anything specifically did. But one thing I can say, and it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit personal, but I know, when I was writing the book, I was almost done with the book and my mother passed away. And that was one of those things that there is, you know, death in the book and her dealing with it. And I think it kind of changed a little bit of perspective for me, you know, because I had never lost anyone. I'd lost a lot of people, but not anyone that close to me. So, you know, that as difficult as it is to admit, that's one of those things that definitely strengthens some of the perspective in writing. But aside from that, I don't usually include characters that are based on real life. I mean, I'm sure, you know, some character traits, maybe, you know, just things I've seen and that sort of thing. But I always try to reassure people and and friends, like, no, it's more likely that I built this character from a movie I saw than real life.
Sure. It sounds a little like your own personal taste in books affected your choice of subject and characters, and perhaps a little bit of your own personality as well. Is that a fair summary?
That is. My taste in books, I mean, it's pretty diverse. I mean, I grew up with fairy tales, but I always loved things like Edgar Allan Poe and Nathaniel Hawthorne, things that were a little bit on the darker side. And now I read everything from, you know, like I love Margaret Atwood, but I also love Gillian Flynn and Tana French and mystery writers, and they tend to write things that, you know, have things that are, you know, buried secrets, families, just things unraveling and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's definitely my taste.
Sure.
But I also love, like I said before, I love setting. I love just mysterious places and abandoned places, things like that. So sometimes I'll just go somewhere and the ideas come to mind.
Sure. Now, One True Ocean, you went the traditional publishing route. You found an agent, and the agent found you a publisher, and that was the basic format or model that you used. And I'm curious a little bit to find out about the experience, starting with finding the agent. Did you commit to going the traditional publishing route initially, or did you explore other things first?
I did commit to it, and it was only because when I actually approached, like, finishing the book, I thought, wow, you know, I can't believe I did this, but I want to do whatever I can with this. That's, you know, the best choice. And so I had read that agents are, you know, in order to get your book in the hands of a big publisher, you have to have an agent. And now I think there's probably a lot more publishers now that are available that you don't need an agent. But at the time, anyway, that was the way I wanted to go. And so I did it the old-fashioned way. You know, this was when I started submitting it. It was 2000, and I think it was 2000.
Yeah.
And I had the novel and short story writer's market, which was a paper book, and I had an agent guide, and I basically, you know, picked out names and looked at their profiles and that sort of thing. And even though there was stuff online, there really wasn't much.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have, you know, it wasn't like you could just go to some website and, you know, look up what an agent is looking for. You had to just rely on this guide that came out once a year. And so I picked, I think I picked like the top 10 agents and started with that, because I couldn't possibly, you know, you have to have a paper copy of your manuscript and send it out. And, or in most cases, actually, you send a query. You send like 3 chapters and a synopsis, and then they ask for the manuscript if they're interested.
Yeah.
It still goes, you know, that's the same routine now. The only difference is you can do it by email.
Sure.
So,
but you were sending paper copies of things out. You weren't using email or Dropbox, something like that, to get your material in front of somebody.
Yeah. So the wait, the wait is still long, but at least, you know, you can, you know, check your inbox every hour or whatever. But it was an even more excruciating wait. You'd send something out and you'd be lucky if you heard back in 6 weeks on a query or something like that. Mm-hmm. So this agent, I did hear back from a couple others who had said, you know, this is good, but, you know, it's not quite what we're looking for right now. And that sort of thing. And that kind of became the routine. And I'm not really sure if she was, this agent was in the first round or the second, but she was definitely in my top, you know, 15 or 20. I think she might have been in the top 10, but she didn't get back to me for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of forgot about it. I just thought, okay, well, a lot of them don't respond.
Yeah.
But then she finally got back and said, I'd like to see the whole book. You know, and I was like, oh, okay, so, you know, sent it off, and I think it was probably two months later or something like that I got the call.
Yeah.
And, I'll never forget that moment.
Wonderful.
So,
how many agents total do you think you sent queries to?
For that book, it was, I'm guessing... Oh, it's hard to say. I wish I could look back. Probably 15 or something like that, which is actually not that many.
Yeah.
You know, 15 or 20. Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. How long after you began sending queries out did you get that phone call from the one agent who said, "Yeah, I like your book. I want to represent you."
I think the total time was probably, I'm guessing, I think it was about 6 months or something like that.
Okay.
Because she had said, I can't remember if she actually said, like, right away, you know, send the manuscript, or, and I waited after she had the manuscript, or if I waited on the query. But I think overall it was quite a while, because I do remember thinking she was probably just not in the running anymore.
Sure. Whenever I talk to writers about this phase of their story, they always come back with a description about lots of waiting around, lots of months going by while you wait to hear, and it makes me think that patience is an integral part of the process for getting published. It sounds like it was certainly in your case.
Absolutely, and I was already a little bit used to it because of the short story market. And that was the same thing. It was like, you know, they get hundreds of submissions and you're lucky if you get a note back.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't, and a lot of agents are upfront about that. They say, you know, no response means no, but you wait and, you have to have a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did have one other agent that was, I forgot about this. I had one other agent that was interested, but she had not committed to it. She said, you know, I really like this, but there's, you know, there's just something about it that I don't like or whatever. And I never quite found out exactly why, but she just wanted to kind of give me a support, I guess, and said, you know, keep going. And so I, you know, I think it was like probably another draft later that I sent to the agent that did accept me. So
sure. Okay. From the other agents, if we look for a minute at the agents who did not agree to represent you, did you learn anything from them about your manuscript? And did any of their comments or suggestions lead you to make any changes?
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes it could be confusing because some of the feedback would be completely opposite from another person's feedback. Like I'd see like strong writing, weak story, or you know, weak writing, strong story, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, not in those words, but sometimes they would say things like that, like your plotting is great, but you're overwriting or you're, you know, things like that. But I definitely took advice from every single one of them. Like sometimes, you know, say you just, the introduction is just too long and I sometimes had to take a step back and just see like, okay, what are they talking about? And I definitely learned a lot. Because one thing I will say is agents are really good editors. I mean, the ones that I've actually dealt with, they're really good editors. Mm-hmm. They read a lot.
Yeah.
They know what works. So they definitely helped a lot.
Yeah, sure. Any of the comments from the agents that you talked to lead you to make any changes to your manuscript for One True Ocean?
Yeah. In fact, the one that like almost went with me, or I don't even know if it was that close, but she had said to me, it's kind of a long story, but well, I had written the book in first person originally, and one of the characters was in first person, and I don't know, there was something about it that felt too close and maybe too personal or something, and I'd never done anything like that before, so I switched it, and you can't just change to third person, it's not that easy, but I did that, and I submitted it that way. And so when she wrote to me, or she actually called me, and she said, there's something about this that's off, like, I can't put my finger on it, but, like, there's something about the voice that feels like you're holding back. So I explained to her how I had written it in the first person originally. And she said, I think that's it. I think you're holding back and you went to third person just because it feels less personal. So I didn't actually submit to her again, mm-hmm. but I wrote it in, you know, the way it was originally written. And that's how it ended up
being
published. So
you went back to the first person for the final manuscript.
Yeah, so, okay. You know, the main character of Jenna is, you know, I instead of she.
Right, sure.
And it was a thing I'd never done before, so I thought, oh, it sounds so, you know, sounds like it's me.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were writing about yourself, writing in the first person?
No, but it sounded that way. And I think as a writer, I wasn't as experienced as a writer, so it felt... You know, it just felt personal. Now, if I were to do that now, it doesn't even bother me. It doesn't faze me now.
Yeah, sure.
But it did at the time. It was just I'd never really put stuff out there like that. So.
Yeah. Well, very good. And then let's talk about the process once you and the agent shook hands and agreed to work together. Did your agent ask you to make changes to the manuscript, the one that you engaged?
Yes, she did, and it wasn't a lot of changes. It was just little edits here and there, cleaning it up, making it a little more concise. And there were a couple of parts where she said I could elaborate more. Like if it had, you know, one scene, it would, you know, just kind of expand this scene, make this one a little tighter.
Yeah.
It wasn't a whole lot, 'cause I know we ended up cleaning it up within a couple of months, and then she sent it out after that.
Okay. So the modifications you made to your manuscript as a result of the comments from the agent who represented you, that process took a period of months. It wasn't like a week or two. It was a couple of months, it sounds like.
Yeah, and that's usually, it may sound like a long time, but usually for them, because they're dealing with a whole bunch of authors too, and, you know, they, but for them to go over the manuscript, it usually will take a few weeks for them to mark it up, and then they send it to me and give me a few weeks to make the changes, and it's back and forth.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
I think
we were over email at that point.
Yeah.
We weren't doing things by regular mail anymore.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't remember the exact amount of time, but it wasn't too long.
Yeah. And the changes you made as a result of the review of your agent, did they leave you with the feeling that the book had been improved, or were you unsure, or did you maybe feel otherwise, that they that they didn't help?
I think it was definitely better, because she just, like, sometimes, I mean, if I think sometimes I have a tendency to, you know, be long-winded, or, you know, explain things too much or whatever, or especially in my earlier writing, and she knew how to just make things a little more concise.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it was more of a character thing.
Yeah, yeah.
She'd say, you know, would she really say that, or whatever.
Sure. So a couple of months go by, and you mail, your agent starts to send out queries on your behalf. How long from that point until you shook hands with a publisher and said, yeah, fine, you can publish my book?
I believe it was about a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because she took me on in, it was 2001, I believe it was late summer, early fall, and then Sourcebooks, which is like a mid-sized publisher, Sourcebooks Landmark, which they do fiction, so it's just a division of Sourcebooks, they took my book on around, I think I got the call in September. You know, I should have looked this stuff up, because I don't remember the exact date, but it was definitely about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And she shopped the book around to different places, and I still have letters from some of the big publishers like Random House and HarperCollins that said things like, oh, this was a close call, we almost took this, and but yeah, it was, she just continued to shop it around, she worked really hard, and eventually I got that call, and it was really exciting.
Yeah, I bet. Now, taking a year's worth of effort to find somebody to shake hands and say, fine, we'll publish it, I can imagine feeling discouraged at that kind of a time period. Did you find yourself feeling that way?
Yeah, I did. I started thinking, and I think it was close to a year, but yeah, I just started thinking, you know, is this as good as she thinks it is, or... You know, is the market just really tight, or, you know, what is it? And she just said, you know what, it's the right, you know, you got to find the right publisher. They're all looking for different things at different times. But I imagine she could probably only put so much mileage into it,
you
know.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, any ideas about what there was about your book that caught the agent's eye? You know, there's a lot of writers out there, and I will include myself in this group, who've queried dozens of agents about a novel, only to get, you know, silence or rejection, and, you know, you're left without a sense of what in the world are they seeing in my manuscript that makes them just ignore it.
Yeah.
Did you get a sense of what it was in your manuscript that made them like it enough to want to pick it up?
Well, I know that I sent only to people who were looking for a certain kind of book, so that was part of it. Like, the genre was, like, upmarket fiction, which they didn't really call... I don't think they called it upmarket fiction at the time. It was, like, kind of more like women's fiction with suspense and mystery. But she was looking for books that were psychological. She liked family secrets. She liked dual timelines and things like that. So I thought, oh, that sounds perfect.
Yeah.
But she also said, I don't want to quote her, but I do remember saying it was you know, it's very psychological, psychological suspense, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And very visual. I do remember her saying that too.
Okay. Yep.
So, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Did you take advice or guidance from anybody on the query letters you sent to agents, or did you just use your good common sense and hope that it would get you through?
I used the Writer's Market. It's called the Novel and Short Story Writer's Market, which had basically everything you needed to submit a book query.
Yeah.
And it talked about, you know, nonfiction, fiction, children's books, that sort of thing. And so I just kind of looked at the book and saw sample query letters. And, you know, now there's information out there everywhere.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it varies, but most of it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I just basically followed the guidebook. And I just wanted to do everything by the book because I had heard that sometimes you do one little thing wrong and they don't even want to read it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wasn't going to, you know, I didn't want to mess up the cover letter or the formatting, things like that. So.
Sure, sure. I'm curious, I'm going to back up a little bit here. Before you sent your manuscript on to agents, you know, during your search for an agent, did you have anybody edit it or review it? Was there any sort of a process like that that you created for yourself?
You know what? I'm ashamed to say I didn't. And I say ashamed now because now it's like, it's one of those things, you don't do anything without a beta reader or an editor. You know, it's just, you shouldn't just assume everything's fine with it.
Yeah,
And I was such a private writer that I didn't even show my friends or, I don't know, I just thought, well, what have I got to lose? They'll come back and say no.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, I just tend to be that way. It's like I'm weird about showing people I know my writing, but I'll send it out to strangers.
Yeah.
But I'm a little better now. But,
right, yeah. Well,
I
know you have a second novel due to come out in about a year, or I should say next year, 2022 sometime, and you're at work on a third. Do you think you'll have, are beta readers, have they been involved in that process, or do you expect them to be?
Well, you would think I'd learn from the first time, but no, they weren't. Oh. I think I get so carried away with the writing, and next thing you know, I have a book.
Gotcha.
And I self-edit, which isn't the same. You really should have a second set of eyes, third set of eyes. But I must have edited it 100 times. And some of that, one thing I can give credit to, is some of the agents I submitted it to, the second book, who didn't take it on, gave me really good advice. And they didn't go through my manuscript with a fine-tooth comb, but I feel like that was sort of editorial advice in a way, so it did help me.
That's very nice. I would guess if you're getting from agents some kind of communication that includes recommendations or suggestions, you must feel like you're doing something the right way.
And I'm not, it's not like I'm above, you know, someone editing my book. I definitely need it. I don't know, there's something, I just, maybe I'm impatient, I just send it out and you know, then I get feedback and I say to myself, I should have sent it to a professional editor, but you know, I live and learn, I guess. But
yeah.
But yeah, I was lucky to have feedback from agents. And I had two agents that I went through what's called a revision request, which means they like the book enough, they don't like it enough to take it on, but they like the book enough to actually like suggest some edits and see if you want to go through with them, and then, you know, with no promises, and then read it again.
Right.
And even those didn't work out because I did some edits that they suggested, but it still wasn't quite what they wanted.
Sure.
You know, they had said, like, you know, amp up the action and this and that.
Yeah.
The suspense. But after that, I took some of their advice and I kind of stepped back from the book for a while, and I did a complete, not a complete rewrite, but I rewrote a lot of it last year. So. Yeah.
Okay. Again, backing up just a little, the agent who agreed to represent you on your first novel, One True Ocean, did you feel compelled to take their suggestions for modifications, or did you resist any? I got to figure, you're on your first novel, you're unfamiliar with the process, you're wanting to make a good impression, and along come some suggestions, maybe some of which you don't agree with. And I'm wondering, did you just accept all of the recommendations that they wanted to make changes to, or did you resist any?
I didn't resist any, because I always have this, I have this respect for people who've been in the industry that long and who read that much and that sort of thing. I just said, you know what, I like her ideas. And her ideas were not major. They weren't really story changes. They were more like structural.
Yeah.
But I believed she knew better.
Yeah.
And for the most part, that's how I feel about the agents too. Mm-hmm. I think they all had really good points and just made me kind of take a step back and,
yeah,
you know, had no I had no problem.
Sure.
As much as I don't, you know, I don't work with an editor ahead of time, but I definitely accept constructive criticism.
So fast forward again, you've got a publisher that says, yeah, we'd like your book, we'd like to publish it. How long from that moment until the book actually got into print? Was it a few months or a year or some other interval?
That was also a year.
Okay.
And I guess that surprised me, because I didn't know what standard was, but I guess that it's about the industry standard. It can be anywhere from like 8 months to sometimes as much as 2 years.
Yeah.
It's probably might be longer now, because now sometimes when a book gets published, now you have paperbook, ebook, sometimes audiobooks.
Yeah.
But mine was 1 year.
Okay. And of that 1 year, how much of it was taken up with editing the manuscript?
I'd say it was the final. I didn't really get any edits until a few months after I signed the contract.
Yeah.
And I started working directly with the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say probably a few months. And then later, the galleys come back for the book, and that's like the paper. It's like the flat paper version of the book that's going to be literally folded together.
The first draft that's in paper.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's really interesting to see. But yeah, we went through a few edits, and that was a few months. And then when the galleys came back, I had another 2 weeks or so to edit those.
Yeah.
So it was a few months. Then we went back and forth with other things like titles, covers, talking about publicity and where we would do book signings and that sort of thing. So the last 6 months was extremely busy and made me understand why it takes a year to publish a book.
Yeah. And I'm curious, were there any of the ideas or suggestions that your publisher wanted to pursue that didn't sit well with you, or were you good with everything?
Let me see. There actually was a subtitle on the book that they wanted to put that I wasn't crazy about. Actually, I'm not even sure if it's technically, it's not really a subtitle so much as a just a little quote that goes on the front, but I wasn't really that happy with it, but I didn't really have the final say on that one.
Overall, were you pleased with your experience with the traditional publishing process as far as One True Ocean was concerned? Did you finish that process feeling like it had been good, or did you feel like maybe something less than that. Maybe it was good and it was flawed in certain ways.
Oh, I thought it was great. I felt that, I guess I felt honored to be a part of that. And still to this day, you know, I still say to myself, wow, I can't believe they actually wanted my book. And, you know, I don't know how many books they published a month at the time, but it wasn't that many. They were a little smaller than they are now. But, I got a lot out of it. I learned a lot. It was kind of an eye-opening experience, though, because you realize how much they put into putting your book out.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always been amazed at the details I hear from folks who have been down the traditional publishing route about editing. A lot of times an agent might want more than one round of editing, and a lot of publishers will want more than one round of editing. That part in particular is common. I guess when you get extra pairs of eyes looking at your manuscript, there's no end to the things they can find. I'm wondering if you felt surprised by the quantity of editing.
Well, with my agent, we went through one, I think it was like one set of edits. And then with the publisher, I don't think there were as many edits, but they did ask for, you could call this a big edit, but they asked for an extra chapter. Mm-hmm. And it was about a character that's a minor character. They just thought there should be a little bit more of her. And it was the main character's little sister.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, could you write a chapter with the two of them? You know, we feel like you mention her in it, and she's just not quite in it enough. And so I did, and I was so much happier with it.
No kidding.
I feel like it was, you know, it came at this time where it needed that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a major event, but it's sort of, it's more of a character building event.
Yeah.
So, it was a good call as far as I'm concerned by them.
Sure. I'm wondering, can you point us to any lessons you learned through that process that you might have used in drafting or seeking out publishing for your second novel?
Well, for my second book, everything was so different because it was years later. I took so long to actually finish my second book, and it was just because I went off in different directions and did different things and, came back to it three or four times. But when I came back, everything had changed. Everything was online. Some of the processes were different for submitting. But I tried to use what I knew about the industry.
As you were writing your second novel, did you find that you were editing or adjusting your writing at all to reflect what you learned from the publishing process on your first novel?
Yes, actually, I feel like I, maybe not so much about the publishing process, but the writing process, I feel like I was a much better writer with my second novel. Not that the first one was bad or anything, but I was just so new at it. And I felt like I knew a little bit more about just structuring a book and that sort of thing. But a little bit more about submitting too. It was, you know, it had been a long time and everything had changed. So.
Yeah. Any suggestions for budding writers, developing writers, unpublished writers who are looking to go with an agent or a traditional publisher, things that you might be aware of that are common and that will exclude people from getting due consideration?
Well, I think one of the things they can definitely do is follow the guidelines, because it's still true today, just like it was years ago, that agents and publishers want to see that you took the time to look up the rules and to do things right, writing a synopsis, structuring a manuscript or formatting a manuscript, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's like the first thing they're going to look at.
Yeah.
And if they see, you know, some kind of handwritten thing on a pink paper or something, they're probably not going to even look at it, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Their needs change all the time. And they will say, okay, I'm looking for young adult fantasy novel with this sort of character and very specific things. And you can't get that from a book that comes out once a year.
Right.
You know, yep. You have to see what they're looking for right now.
Yes.
So that's a good resource. And if they wanted to go straight to a publisher, which is what I did with my second book, in the end, I mean, I started with agents, but then after I rewrote the book, I went straight to publishers. One place I highly recommend is a website called authorspublish.com. And they have a whole list of publishers that take manuscripts without an agent.
Interesting. That's got to be something pretty significant. Yeah.
Yeah. And it used to be, you know, I used to look online and I'd find maybe four or five. But then I went to this site and they had, you know, must be a couple hundred or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
And they also have short story markets and things like that.
Yeah.
And other useful guidelines.
Interesting.
And,
okay.
Like lessons and all kinds of things. But that would be where I'd go for publishers.
Sure. Okay. Now, tell me about your second book. Can you give us a sense for the audience? Is it adult, you know, young adult? Is it dramatic? Is it thriller? Is it family drama?
I call it it's adult fiction. It's drama with, well, technically it's domestic suspense, which is kind of like you know, character-driven drama, but with suspenseful elements, elements of mystery. And like my first book, it has a dual timeline, and it has two different narrators, which I just love doing too. But
yeah.
And it's based on, it takes place in Massachusetts, and it's based loosely on this area near where I grew up, which is I grew up in Weston, but Newton, Mass. And I don't know why, I just kind of fell in love with the area, and I decided I'm going to base something around the Charles River. And
yeah.
But yeah, it's a domestic, I guess, domestic drama, but it has elements of mystery and suspense.
Sure. It sounds like it bears a lot of similarities to your first novel, One True Ocean.
Yeah. Probably a little more. I have two main characters, and they're kind of interwoven, I guess is the right word, their stories. So that, you know, things slowly unfold. So in the same way that The One True Ocean does, yeah. Their stories sort of overlap and unfold, and things are revealed slowly.
Sure.
Hopefully.
The decision to write a novel that bears some basic similarities to your first, was that an intentional decision, or did it just kind of work out that way?
It kind of worked out that way, although the stories are very different.
Yeah.
It's very, this one, actually, the One True Ocean takes place in, like, at the time it was like 1990s and then the 1970s. And this one takes place in the 1970s and the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going back a little bit. But,
yeah.
And the story is definitely different. Probably a little more, I would say a little more suspenseful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the editing and related processes, have those changed very much in 18 years?
As far as my process?
As far as your experiences goes, yeah.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of input from, like I said, from agents who helped me when I first was submitting it to them.
Yeah.
And a lot of support and just different suggestions and things like that I took on. And then I rewrote it. But I'd say, I probably learned a lot from that. So I still didn't submit it to an editor. I didn't even give it a second set of eyes, which, you know, I'm guilty of that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I took my chances, and after I rewrote it, I was going to submit it to agents. And I said, you know what? That's a long process, and I want to try something different.
Yeah.
I want to go straight to a publisher, because
mm-hmm.
I'd never done that before. So I just decided to do that. And it wasn't like, oh, I want to rush this, but I knew the agent process was a long one, and I was very curious about these other small publishers, too, because they sometimes the focus is different. There's a more close relationship with the author as mm-hmm. far as working on your book and that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, yeah. And the editing process of your second publisher, has that been comparable to what you saw the first time around?
Well, I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Oh, okay. So, sorry, I'm jumping too far.
Because it was just, I just signed a contract. It was just a few weeks ago, actually.
Okay. All right.
So, I'm right off the. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. Sure.
But we haven't actually. We just got a date, and that was, you know, October 2022. So.
Sure. Okay. So maybe in about a year's time, we should have another conversation about the editing process and how that compares to what you had 17 or 18 years ago. I'd be very happy to hear. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm working with a great group of like editors and publishers and other authors, and I'm just really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, it does sound like the second go around will be a little less time consuming and perhaps a little easier. It sounds like you've figured a few things out.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. I always hope that, you know, there's always something to learn. As a writer, you have to just keep, I hope to just keep learning and improving, and I'm hoping that I'm a better writer and that things go smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely always welcome criticism, you know, and constructive criticism, because you're just, especially if you're the only set of eyes.
Right. Yeah. I'm curious, with your first novel, you had very little in the way of input from outside sources before it got into the hands of agents. And your publisher, did the comments surprise you? Did you get reactions you didn't expect?
Are you talking about my first book or
One True Ocean? Your first book.
Oh, I see. So, the comments from the editors,
the comments from the agents in the first case, and then the comments from the editors at the publishing company.
Oh yeah. As far as I mean, I was pretty surprised by the positive comments, because as much as I just dared to send it out and everything, I guess I really didn't expect to get so much positive feedback. I thought, you know, because I'd been through the whole short story thing and the rejection after rejection, and but as far as the editorial comments, no, I wasn't really surprised by anything or disappointed. I actually wanted that.
Okay.
So even though, like, it may seem a little weird, but even though I don't hire editors or I haven't in the past, or give it to friends to read and that sort of thing, I loved getting feedback from editors.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you might be one of those rare writers, Sarah, who is able to anticipate what folks are going to want and is able to self-edit. I can't say I've met too many folks who fall in that category.
Well, I still admit that I should. When I do get edits, I think, oh, you know, I should have done that. And I'm definitely not a perfect writer.
Well, none of us are, but I most writers I know, present company included, go through a ton of having their manuscript reviewed before daring to send it out to agents or to publishers. That seems to be almost a requirement, sort of like going to high school before you go into college.
Right.
And occasionally you'll find somebody who dispenses with that process and does it successfully, which is really unique and interesting to come upon. It leads me to think, Sarah, that you've got some kind of perception that maybe some of us don't. It's a good thing. It works for you.
Or I just have a fear of sending it to people I know or something. Sometimes too. I remember in some of the college writing classes I had, we'd exchange, you know, different short stories with each other, and it always came down to taste. I found, I'd give one classmate a story that, and they would love it, and somebody else would not. So I think I was afraid of that. Like, you know, if I give it to somebody, like if I give it to just a peer reader or a friend, that I'm going to want to change it if they tell me to.
Yeah.
So maybe as it is, I should send it and just see what happens. But, I think the next time around, because I'm wrapping up a third book, and this time I think I'm going to hire an editor before I do anything with it.
Yeah.
Just to be sure.
Yeah. I've got to ask why. I mean, you've got two books, both of which publishers have agreed to without the benefit of a formal editor. And if I was in your shoes, I would think to myself, maybe I don't need that. Maybe I'm one of the few who can bypass that. But you're thinking, yeah, maybe I should give it a shot.
Yeah, I think I still need it.
Yeah, yeah.
And based on some of the feedback, even though I had a lot of good feedback, you know, I've had some other stuff too. Like, you know, I've had people say, oh, you know, this dialogue is stiff, or this is wordy, or the sentence isn't right. You know, so it's not, you know, it's definitely not, even if I think it's ready, maybe it's not as ready, and maybe, you know, something else about it speaks to them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure.
All right.
I mean, some writers are better at structure than they are at dialogue.
Yes.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Hard to say, but I definitely want to do what other people are doing, because I, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe the process wouldn't have been this long if I had actually, you know, stepped up and hired an editor or something.
Sure, entirely possible. Yeah, good thought. Let me change directions on you briefly. I know that you were the founder and editor of a literary magazine for a while. I'm blanking on the name. Was it Voila?
Foliage.
Thank you. And I'm very eager to hear about the process that you went through looking at submissions and what impressions you might have gleaned after having seen what I would imagine are many dozens of submissions to your literary magazine.
Yeah, that was it's sort of a strange period in my life where I look back and I say, well, I don't think I was even qualified to run a literary magazine, but I just had this obsession. I had to create one. I loved literary magazines, and I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to have another one for people to, you know, share their work? And I just looked into how to do it, and I put an ad in, you know, and this was a long time ago, so this was one of those things where, you know, again, there weren't many places online to put ads. And I think I put an ad in the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance newsletter. And I created the publication on my, like, in desktop publishing software, and then sent it to the printer. You know, everything was just sort of like, I used scanning software to, like, people would send me paper manuscripts, and I would scan them in and then go through and edit them. It was such a time-consuming process, but it gave me so much joy just giving other people the ability to get published.
Well, what I'm wondering, though, is what you might have learned about how to successfully submit to a literary magazine having run your own.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did my own after I had published a few stories, and... you know, that definitely didn't give me, qualify me to be a magazine publisher. But I just thought, you know, people have magazines of all shapes and sizes. And, you know, there's Story Magazine, and then there's this, you know, little, like, folded, stapled magazine at the college, you know. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be great, just because I know people love seeing their work in print, so I wanted to give that opportunity. I just gave it a shot, and people sent me things, and I didn't get a whole lot of submissions, but I'd say I was able to accept probably, you know, 10% of them or something, which is...
And how did you decide? How did you decide which ones to accept? What sort of things said to you, this is worth picking up and running with it?
Oh, I guess what I thought was well written or just spoke to me. But again, looking back, I'm probably not. I probably haven't read enough short stories to actually be a good judge of that. Mm-hmm. But I thought they were good. So, and there were some poems too, and I'm definitely not a poetry expert. Sure. I just thought, well, this one speaks to me. I'm gonna publish this, and it was it just gave me joy, you know. And I put the whole thing together. I had sisters contribute artwork for the cover, and but then I realized, you know, after a couple of years, I thought, what am I doing? I mean, I loved it, and I love doing that for authors, but I realized it really probably wasn't my thing, and I missed writing and having the time to actually write.
Sure.
So
I could see that being the case. Yeah.
I closed it. But I still look back at it and think, wow, that was so fun, because I got to take my love of short stories and, you know, choose my own and put their work out there. And it was tough to distribute too, because I didn't know a lot about distribution. I didn't get a major distributor, so I basically made this website that was pretty lame. And people could order there and order by mail. And I think maybe through the main publishers, Writers and Publishers Alliance, I think they might have put an ad for me to order there. It was a great experience, but it was probably one of these things that, you know, was not my expertise.
Sure. Well, it sounds like I've owned and run a couple of businesses, some of which were not very successful. And I tell folks, well, I got $1 million education, and it only took me about a year and $50,000. It sounds like it's one of those kind of experiences.
Exactly. And I'm one of those people, like, sometimes I just get a creative itch for something, and I'll do it, or I'll try it, and then I realize, oh, this was not what I thought, or, you know, what am I doing? And I always end up going back to writing. And it took away a lot of time, too. It was basically everything. I mean, I was working a day job, and, you know, I'd go home, and that's all I did.
I'm sure it was very time-consuming.
Okay.
Well, Sarah Beth Martin, author of One True Ocean, has been our guest today. I want to thank you, Sarah, for sharing with us your time and your insight. I feel richer for the experience, and appreciate it more than I can say.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Sure.
You can find out more about Sarah Beth Martin, her book, One True Ocean, and about her next book, The River Before Dark, coming in October 2022, at sarahbethmartin.com.